Hi, everybody. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Beverly.
I just found a new... I'm going to do a little reading tonight. Here's the program. I'm going to do a little reading tonight out of both the 12 and 12 in the big book, and then how I'm going to summarize the 12 steps is through the 12 promises. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Okay. I also want to comment to the new member tonight. Please do not be intimidated on anything that we're going to discuss here. We're kind of at the end of the description of the 12 steps. And you are probably just beginning with the first. So if you have any questions, write them down, and don't be discouraged and don't be intimidated. Okay? All right. So in the 12 and 12, page 106. Step 12. The joy of living is the theme of AA's 12th step, and action is its key word. Here we turn outward toward our fellow alcoholics who are still in distress. Here we experience the kind of giving that asks no rewards. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives so that we and those about us may find emotional sobriety. When the 12th step is seen in its full implication, it is really talking about the kind of love that has no price tag. Okay, now that's page 106 in the 12 and 12. And then I have some notes here. It's when we first come into AA, and we're not drinking anymore, we have to go to places where there are drinking. I mean, many of us do because it's either our job or there's a social function that we have to be at. And one of the hints that I can tell you is whenever I go anywhere, and whenever I should say, whenever I went anywhere, and even that still happens today, I always take myself. And then when I get to the place where there's going to be a lot of drinking, or, you know, I was just at a wedding reception a couple of weekends ago for my granddaughter, and I stayed until the activities were over, and then when the dancing began and the drinking got, you know, even more and more, I went home. I was very comfortable to do that. And my family used to take bets on how long I would stay when I went.
Yeah.
You know, I'd go no matter what was going on, dinner, holidays, it didn't matter. I went. When I started to get nervous and uncomfortable, I left. And I didn't care what they thought. It was what was going on inside of me. And I couldn't afford to get nervous or people please or do something that was going to... make me extremely nervous. So that's another thing too. Always take yourself. And even today, Ron goes in his car, I go in my car more often than not, because he likes to stay longer or he likes to leave earlier or whatever. So, you know, we both go, we stay until something comes up and we have to go, and it really works out. It really works out for us. Okay, now the next thing it says is page 152 in the big book. These little paragraphs are just taking us to the end. You are going to meet new friends in your community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds. High and low, rich and poor, these are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give yourself, to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. That's in the chapter A Vision for You. And this is an essential part of staying sober. You know, working with others in the 12th step is it becomes our life. The spiritual part of it and working with others, that's what we do. And so when I was sober a year, I sponsored my first girl. And I don't know where she's at today, but I stayed sober. And see, that's the important thing here, is that this is how we take care of ourselves. Whether or not that person wants sobriety doesn't matter. In fact, I have something real quick here to read on that. We take care of ourselves. We stay sober for the day. When you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. Now, when people say that without reading the big book, they think that's what an awful thing to say. You know, I mean, a lot of people, when they get sober, they go to the bars and drag them off the bar stools and get them to AA because they think that's where they belong. But, it's a God thing. It truly is. In God's time, when we're ready to be here, we'll be here. And if we're meant to stay here, we'll stay here. And if we're not ready, we'll go back out. And we'll come back. You know, I always say there's some have slips before they get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and some have slips after they get to Alcoholics Anonymous. The most important thing is that we make it back. And anybody that sits in judgment of anyone who goes out and comes back in, shame on you, because you might have another drunk coming. We learn how not to sit in judgment of anybody. We just always take a look at ourselves. All right, so now I thought about what to talk about. What are we going to talk about in the 12th step? It's a combination of things. It's having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps and carrying the message to the alcoholic. So it's twofold. And the 12 promises, although they're earlier in the big book and not at the end of chapter the first 164 pages, I think they'll summarize the 12 steps pretty thoroughly. I mean, I will. One of the things here, my sponsor was very big in service. In fact, at one point she was a trustee in New York. Her husband was a trustee and he died and she took his place till the end of the term. So she dragged me along to general service meetings, and I thought they were the most boring thing that there ever was. But that's because of my nervous, high-strung personality. I couldn't sit quietly and think about what general service is truly all about. And so how I was active in AA, besides sponsoring, was getting involved in all the social things. You know, I was chairman of everything that there's to be chairman of. I went into the prison. I was Gretchen and I, and I think Mary Alcoholic, the three of us were the ones that started the women's prison meeting. There was a meeting on Friday night called the Marble Group. It's still in existence, but back then it was a really big meeting. But there weren't any women's groups in Erie, and there was a woman that came to Erie, and she'd been brought up in women's groups. And the only meeting that there was a Tuesday afternoon meeting, and it was more of a coffee clatch than an AA meeting. And so she asked us if we would start a women's meeting, and we did, and it was a Friday night meeting, and that is still in existence today. I think that's called Bridget?
Lovely.
The Lovely Women's Meeting, yes. and that's still in existence today. So we did a lot of things in the beginning, and you know, the chairman of the central committee, the chairman of the conference, all the chairmanships within the conference, within the central committee. And so I really learned a lot about AA. And the tragedy is today, there aren't any young people that are willing to get involved. For whatever reason, they're too busy in their lives or whatever, but they can't get. Even these groups, I mean, when you look at who sets up the meetings, who tears the meeting down, it's not the young people, it's the old ones. Even the meeting that I go to usually on Thursday nights, there's a lot of work to do after the meeting is over with. Cleaning out the coffee pot, straightening out the tables, getting things organized, and getting things back to where they were so the church won't be upset with us. The young people walked out of the meeting. They got places to go, and there we are. We're still stuck doing the work. But on the other hand, that's a good thing for me because it keeps me sober. I don't think I'm better than anybody else, that I can't contribute to whatever it is that needs to be done. So, with that, we'll get into the promises. In doing the things that were suggested, the promises came about. And so I'm going to go through this because I tried to give examples of myself and what I did with those promises. And I guess what I could do is read each one. You don't have a copy of the promises, do you, anywhere? It doesn't matter, but you know, they could be broken out the way we have them written out. All right, the first one is we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And the freedom and happiness for me was no longer worried about how and when I was going to get the money to drink. I mean, I noticed that right away when I first got sober. I didn't have to worry about where I was going to get the money to drink. And then on a day-to-day basis, no shame, because I knew I was doing the right thing. I didn't like it, you know, and as I've said before, I was not. I use the word hate because that's how strong I felt when I first came here. I hated my sponsor, but I was willing to do whatever she wanted me to do because I was afraid if she didn't, she would fire me. And see, way back then, when I was talking to the new girl tonight, I was very intimidated, and I was a terrible people pleaser. And I did everything and anything that anybody wanted me to do so you would like me. And so it was very hard for me to not like Carol and yet not let her know that. And I did the simple things like praying in the morning and thanking God at night, which gave me some peace. And reading the big book and golden books at night in bed. Every night I did that. It was very, like I said, it was very comfortable for me. And I would fall asleep reading those books. And as I said, the peace started to come over me. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And I started to like myself a tiny bit. And laughing came easier, you know, and especially at a meeting. I love when I walk into a meeting. I always have. And somewhere in here I've said, but I guess I'm just going to go with the flow here. I was told very early in the beginning to kind of walk into the meeting, put a smile on your face, because you might be the only person that a new person, you might be the only big book that a new person would see. And, you know, lots of times you've got people walking into meetings and they're crying and wailing and carrying on. And in my opinion, that's what a sponsor is for, so that you share everything, that all the pain that's inside of you with the sponsor, and not going to a meeting and sharing it with the whole group. And that's what I did. I did that. I shared all my nasty stuff with my sponsor, and when I came to a meeting, I always had a smile on my face, and I always introduced myself to the new person. And that still goes on today. So, I don't know. I guess, you know, I guess it's an individual thing, but I wouldn't want to do it any other way that I did it. And I wouldn't want to have any other sponsor than what I had, because she saved my life. She truly saved my life. Now, leading reminds me of what an awful life I had and how good my life is today. So that would be under the, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. And my past is my gift to the new person by sharing where I came from to make her feel not so bad about herself. And in sharing, we get into some very deep stuff. And that's part of it. That's part of the 12-step work. And then, as I've told you before, if there's something that this girl has, some kind of a situation that she has that I've never been in, I direct her to somebody whom I trust, who went through the same thing that she's going through. Because, you know, if I'm not suffering the pain she's suffering, then I can't even imagine what to say to her. And so it's always better to do that. Seek out someone that has been through, you know, what this person's going through. Okay, let's see. Time gave me peace about myself for learning how to live and getting a glimpse of serenity when I put my head on my pillow at night, and that is so true. I can still do that today. As long as I haven't done anything to hurt anybody, that's what I do. Put my head on the pillow at night and I'm zonked out. Even through Ronald snoring. And I taped his snoring one time. When we lived in the house in the country, it was a pretty big house. And he was snoring one night and I could hear him all the way downstairs. So I taped him. And, well, wasn't impressed. But then I guess I have to go along with that, the story about me getting used to the snoring. And, you know, I was complaining about it one day. Oh my gosh, she snores so loud. I can't sleep. Well, right about that time when I was doing that complaining, there was an Ann Landers column in the newspaper, and there was a woman that wrote in about her husband snoring. And the response came from another person who said, "I wish I could hear my husband snore." So I got used to the snoring. I don't ever hear it. You know, I lay right next to him in bed every night and I never hear his snoring. So that's a good thing. All right. Sharing ourselves gives us hope when we see how our experience can help others. Our families and coworkers see a huge difference in what we are becoming. We feel good about ourselves and are taking responsibility for the pain and the frustration we caused. We then are no longer useless or feel sorry for ourselves. And so that, you know, that says pretty much what I did. You know, I just owned up to anything that was going on that I might be responsible for. If someone brings something up and I was involved in it at the time and not a very nice person, I make amends. I might have made amends to the person, but I might not have apologized to my family if they were there when I, you know, caused the pain. So, you know, there's always that, the second, you know, the not only the person that we hurt, but the people around them that we hurt too. You know, it goes on and on and on. So, so I did that, and I guess I still feel I do that today too. We then are no longer useless and feel sorry for ourselves. And that is true. I don't feel sorry for myself anymore. I haven't for a long time. I mean, maybe a moment or an hour when you get into self-pity over certain things. Oh, if I could only have this, or if I can only have that, or if... It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Because I only have what God wants me to have, not what I want. And also it said somewhere in one of these books, but I couldn't, you know, there's so much in here, and I've read this book so many times through book studies through the years, and I have so many things, you know, yellowed out, but there's some place in here that says you do not get the material things until the spiritual things are worked out. So if you're praying for something and praying for something and you're not getting it, don't get mad. You might have some work to do so that you would be in a position to enjoy whatever it is you want to have. If that makes any sense. But that statement is in the book. You don't get the material thing until the spiritual thing is worked out. And that all comes from within. I became a good listener to my daughters. I changed my priorities. I learned how to be a good mother. I was told that when I walk into a meeting, all right, this is where, put a smile on my face because I may be the only big book someone may see that day. My wants were not important anymore, and my needs, I learned, were always met. There's always enough. You know, there's always enough. If you really think back over your life, the way we're learning how to live it, there just things come up and things happen, and there it is. There's always enough. There's enough food, there's enough clothing, there's enough shelter, there's enough of everything that we need for the day. And you have to learn how to understand that and think about it in your life. You know, it's all part of the spiritual growth, is getting out of ourselves and seeing what God really does for us in our lives. Okay, let's see. Now on this one here. I went to school. I was very active in AA. I sponsored. I enjoyed my daughters and how they were living their lives. Even today, I'm very careful never to interfere in the girls' lives and always be a good listener. I developed many wonderful friendships, if they haven't died, and I am very careful never to gossip or repeat anything that is ever told to me. And I have no fear today, no fear at all. I'll tell you a little story about what I did with my daughters. One that always stands out is they worked at bingo at St. Mary's on Friday nights, and I come home from work on Friday nights. That was the night I always went out, so I put my pajamas on. I ate a dish of cottage cheese and tomatoes, and I laid on the couch and watched all the funny shows that were on at that time in the 70s. And so I take my daughters to bingo, and then at 10 o'clock or so, I pick them up. Well, this one night I went to pick them up, and my youngest daughter got in the car, and she was crying because she'd lost her bingo money. You know, the money that they make, the tips that they get. And I said, "What do you mean you lost it?" She said, "It was in my apron, and now it's not there anymore." So I was in my nightgown and my bathrobe, and I got out of the car, and I went into that place, and I said to the woman who was running it, "My daughter didn't get any money tonight, and she worked hard for those 4 hours. So I think she should get paid something." And so the woman gave me a $5 bill, and I took it out to the car and gave it to Carol. Now, we don't know if that was how much she made or not, because she hadn't counted it. And we know somebody took it out of her apron. So I was very proud of myself for being able to stand up for something that was the most important thing to me. And that's how I learned how to do things the way I do them today, by taking one little step at a time and learning how to stand up for things that I believe in and not pushing it off onto somebody else. All right, now, let's see. And I have no fear today, and I'm going to tell you a story before we close tonight about fear. Intuitively, know what to do when a situation arises, always starting with a prayer. When something comes up and you don't know what to do, because I know God is in charge, so whatever is happening, I should be aware of what He wants me to do. And that's where the prayer and meditation comes in, too, you know, where you have to think about it. See, what I've learned, and I'm still learning, and I think I've told you this before, is that I have to wait 24 hours before I take any action. When I get upset about something, truly upset, and it needs a verbal reprimand, if I go out and and do the damage right after I find out about it, I always have to go back and make amends. Always. And so what I have to do is fight with myself to wait 24 hours. And I'll tell you, sometimes that's really hard to do, especially for somebody with my personality. It's very, very hard to do that. But when I do it, my mind always changes the next day after the 24 hours is up, and I don't feel so upset anymore. And so I'm very relieved that I did it. So there are so many things in my life today that I can't share with you because I don't remember them. But whatever they are, the same thing that's in me is in you. And you can live the same way I do by following the same rules that I follow. In the 12 steps, helping others, that's always the most important thing. When I worked at GE, I used to have a little prayer book that I'd read every morning. And people got to know that I was an alcoholic and an Alcoholics Anonymous. And so they'd ask me questions about people in their life that had problems with alcohol. I always was able to give them a name. If it was a guy, I'd give them a guy's name. Poor Tom Hoffman, he was always chasing around somebody. And even my family doctor, he called me one time and had me find somebody for a man that was, a man that had one of his patients who was having a problem with alcohol. And so, people become aware. I'm not ashamed of who I am. And I know that if I'm listening and I hear something that I might be able to help, I stick my nose right in there. So, okay, what happens to me here? All right, at the very end, I'm going to read page 164. It's almost to the end, so I'm going to share my latest story in my life. A couple people in this room have already heard it, so just go to sleep while I'm talking, Jerry. I share it with my dearest friends. I share my life with my dearest friends, no matter what's going on. And you are my dearest friends tonight because you put up with me for 12, 10 weeks or whatever. So I have never in my life been worried about money. Never. I never worried about it. When I had a job, I had a savings, I had a 401k, I had everything I was supposed to have. I did everything I was supposed to do. So I never, ever, ever worried about money. I had enough to send my daughters to Catholic high schools. I had enough to give them a wedding. Each of them a wedding. And, so as I said, and then Ron and I got married, and it was the same way. He was the same way I was. So we went along for years, and I retired from GE and got bored and got another job, and then that turned into a nice job. And so in 2014, I retired. And when I retired, I lost $800 a month. Well, I had no fear of that because we had savings and I trust in God. I know that there always is enough. So a couple of years went by, and last year some really big things happened to us. It was probably pretty close to $10,000 by the time everything got done. And all of a sudden I thought, oh my God. I always paid our bills. I always paid more than what I had to pay, more than the minimum. But I never paid everything off. Now, this was totally me. I was responsible. I'm the one that took care of the money. I paid the bills. I did everything. So, one day, Ron and I were trying to get together $100, and we laughed. We said, we can't do this anymore. We can't do this. And we sat down and looked everything over and found out we have been living on credit cards for 2 years. And when these big things happened and they went on credit cards, everything went out. Everything blew everything out of the water. So I tried one situation, and it worked for a while. It was going through this Advantage Credit Counseling. And they did a nice job for me. They really did. In fact, one of our AA members is on the board of that credit counseling program. So we did that for a while, but it wasn't enough. It just wasn't enough. So another person in the program talked to me and said that she had filed bankruptcy, and she gave me the name of a lawyer. Now, I didn't really want to file bankruptcy because I was responsible. I never paid attention. So here's where God comes in. I have no fear of economic insecurity. I have no fear whatsoever. And yes, He takes care of all of our needs, but I wasn't paying attention. And it's a defect that I need to look at and work on. And it doesn't matter how old we are in AA. It's always something that's we're gonna come across that we have to work on. That's why they say progress rather than perfection. I was so humiliated and so ashamed, but we went to this attorney, and he was wonderful. He really was. Well, we couldn't file for bankruptcy in Chapter 7 because we make too much money. But we could file for bankruptcy in Chapter 13, which is like a reorganization, and they put you on a budget. Budget. The attorney said, you have to have a budget. I've never had a budget in my whole life. Never had a budget. So we're in the process of it now, and probably in a month or two, our name will be in the paper. And when you see it, you'll know what it's all about. You won't wonder what the heck's going on with Parshels, you know. And you know what? I know it. God led me through the steps that I had to take to get to the point where I'm at today, where I'm very, very comfortable. I can't do the things that I used to do. I can't spend the money that I used to spend, and neither can Ron, and he's awful. You know, I mean, he's awful. Somebody walked into the Alkanon Club last night that comes to meetings to ask people for money, and didn't they ask Ron? And right in front of my nose, he gave her $10. I said, oh, and of course he wouldn't say no if his life depended on it. So I have to live with that. I can't change Ron. You know, I can only work on me. So at any rate, and life is good. Life is very good. I have no shame, no guilt, no remorse today because I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, and I have to learn how to budget. So with that, I'm going to read the last, I know you guys have heard this 1,000 times. Oh, I like to read this too. I think I read this maybe when I first started. What made us friends in the long ago, when first we met, well, I think I know. The best in me and the best in you hailed each other because they knew that for always and always since life began, our being friends was part of God's plan. Okay, here it is. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Usually when I cry like this at the podium, I pretend that there's a naked man running across the back of the room. That works. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then. And I just want to thank every one of you for allowing me to do this. It was so good for me. So, so good for me. I mean, I've learned so much about myself through this process that I never thought I'd learn. And thank you for the beautiful flowers. And I love all of you. That's it.
Thank you, Beverly. We have time for a few questions.
Nobody has a question?
I can't. Speechless.
Okay.
Thank you, Beth.
Thanks, Beth.